Thank you for sticking around to the last day of the conference. We absolutely appreciate you being here and look forward to talking more about breaking down the SharePoint 2013 newsfeed. So if you weren't at the previous presentation that Matt and I delivered on Tuesday, let us quickly introduce ourselves. My name is Ben.
Matt.
And we're gonna sort of expound on some of the things that we talked about previously. We're going to get really deep and nitty-gritty into what it takes for all of these great social features that we've been seeing all week to actually work. So, more specifically, what are we going to talk about today? So we're going to start out by talking about the what. So the what, when we say the what, this is all of the social gestures that you've seen in the SharePoint 2013 experience. Everything from posting, replying, following, the great features that you've seen so far this week that we really hope that you've seen how they make work easier for all of your users. But the thing that we're going to be doing a little bit differently from the other rah-rah social sessions is we're going to talk about the how. So when we say how, we're really referring to the services and the processes that make all of this social stuff actually happen. So there's a set of servers and processes, and don't worry if you don't understand all these now, because we're going to dig into every single one of these throughout the course of this presentation. But really, there are a lot of things that make social tick. And then the last thing we're going to talk about is the where. So as you roll out social, as you roll out 2013 and social, people are going to start creating all sorts of great, rich social content. And that social content has to live somewhere. So we're going to, throughout the course of the presentation, talk about all of the places that rich social content that your users are going to be creating actually gets stored. But the interesting thing that we hope that you really take away from this session is more of the why. So as we talk through the what, the how, and the where, we want to really focus on two different types of whys. Leading up to 2013, over the past couple years, we made a lot of tough decisions, and we put a lot of thinking into the architectural model and the model of the social features that we built. And we want to share some of that thinking with you guys so you can understand some of the things that we optimized for, understand some of the tough decisions that we made, some of the trade-offs that we faced as we designed these features. The other why that I think is maybe even going to be more relevant is, why should you care? How is this information going to help you as you roll out social and as you deploy SharePoint 2013 within your organizations? So one of the big why and architectural decisions that we made was, what's the overall approach for social? What's the overall model that we're going to start out with? So can I get a quick show of hands for who uses 2010 and social in 2010 right now? Say more than half, good numbers. So the first couple slides here will hopefully jog your memories if you haven't thought about the social model in 2010 recently. Let's take a look at a scenario. So you can see we didn't get the marketing love on our slides that the keynotes got. But in this case, let's say we have a simple model. We have a person on the left, and we have three people on the right that are interested in what this guy says. And again, I'm not going to really rehash the reasons why you would add somebody as a colleague or follow somebody in 2013, but there are all sorts of great reasons, and hopefully you took that out of the other sessions. But in this case, the people on the right add the person on the left as a colleague, and then the person on the left is going to have something interesting to say. So he's going to use the note board that existed in 2010. He's going to post a note, and that note, when he clicks that post button, ends up getting written, and there's three database writes, because essentially each of the people on the right, each of the people that are the colleagues of that main guy, have their own feed view, and any time that somebody that they're a colleague of says something, we write that thing that they say to their feed view. So this looks, okay, somewhat simple, but you can imagine that as social starts to take off, which is obviously all of our goal, that's why you roll out social features, more and more people are going to start adding that person on the left as their colleague. So you can quickly see that it starts to get a little bit gross. And then, let's say the person on the bottom right decides she's going to say something. Or, God forbid, the guy on the bottom left decides he's going to get social and he's going to say something. So you can see that before too long, the scaling of the model that we used in 2010 starts to get a little bit tedious, a little bit strained. So one of the things that we thought about in 2013 is, how do we consider that scaling? How do we consider performance? And how do we design a new 2013 social model that doesn't suffer from some of those issues? So let's take a look at what we have today. So one of the things that you'll notice and one of the things that we keep hammering is this concept of following. So the new verb is follow in 2013, but it's the same scenario. We have three people that are interested in what the person on the left has to say, so they follow that guy. Now he uses the new, more gorgeous, more slick, streamlined microblogging Post UI and posts a message to the people that are following him. And now we do something a little bit different than what we did before. So instead of doing a database write for every single person who happened to be that guy's colleague, we do one write now to the central location where we store all of the recent activities that have been happening within this company. So this is going to be a theme that we keep coming back to throughout the talk. But essentially what happens then is when any of those three people go to their news feeds, they go to that central location where all of those recent posts are stored, and they see all of the activities that are relevant to them. So you can imagine that if we scale it out the same way that we showed before, same thing, single write to that location, and as more and more people go visit their news feeds, they still always go to that single place to do their reads. So like we saw before, we had more social activities happening, more people were posting, more people were saying things, and as additional people say additional things, it's always one write to that central repository, and then one read when people go to view their news feeds. So at a high level, we really feel confident that this model is going to be more scalable, it's going to perform better, and it's generally going to enable a lot of features that we couldn't build on the 2010 model because those conversations were so distributed, like the ability to reply or the ability to delete a post and be confident that that post just lives in one or two, as we'll see, one or two places, that when you delete it, it really gets deleted for good. So with that model out there, Matt's actually going to start digging into a demo and start talking about what it takes for some of these social things to happen.
Great. Thanks, Ben. So when Ben and I got together to think about how we wanted to explain how all these features worked, one of the models could have been have lots of slides and show you guys really complicated architectural designs. But we are both UX people. We like design. So we took a note from that book and wanted to think about using scenarios to show you how the architecture works so that you can better understand the decisions that we made. So for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to run through the scenario that when we found out we were going to present to you guys, we actually used our social features to create the presentation that you now see. So we're going to run through that in a real-life demo to show you how that works and step-by-step show you how all of the features actually function. So from the get-go, posting to the newsfeed, if you haven't seen this demo yet, then welcome to social. So I'm going to go ahead and open up my Chrome browser because we are cross-browser supportive. And I'm going to go ahead and post. So 3 months ago, I found out that I was going to get approved for presenting at the SharePoint conference. It's my first one here, so I'm super excited. So I come to my newsfeed, and I'm going to post to all of my people I'm following and people following me. And within one post, one click, I now posted that to the feed, as you've seen in other demos, and anyone following me will see that post. So let me show you how that worked. So when you post to the newsfeed, the first thing that gets activated is this user profile service. The user profile service is the key social service involved in all of the microblogging activities and user profile properties and whatnot. You would have seen that in 2010. User profile was key to pretty much doing anything social. So we utilized that service and improved it a bit to use all the cool new social features we have. So when I hit that post button, through the user profile service, that post gets stored in two places. First, the feed cache. The feed cache is that cache, that cloud-like bubble that Ben showed in the previous beautiful architecture design. It's that place that stores all the recent activities so that anyone following me will then see that post. It also gets stored in the personal site, which is the per-user storage quota. It's the persisted place, and if you were at a Noops session previously, each person has a personal site. Also, in 2010, we called it the My Site. And that post lives there permanently. The reason why we chose these two places is because the feed cache is fast, it's quick, and you can store stuff temporarily and have people hit refresh on repeat, like sometimes if you're waiting for a new Twitter post to pop up. And we stored stuff in the personal site so that anyone who comes and visits my profile will be able to see that post permanently. So let me dig a bit deeper into the personal site, how that structure works. You've heard it talked about throughout the week, but we wanted to create this design to show you what the structure looks like. So in 2010, the personal site was used to store documents and whatever the user had put on their own personal My Site, site collections, subsites, whatnot. So in this release, when creating the microblogging UI interface and everything, we added what we call the microfeed list. And the microfeed list is the news is all the newsfeed related activity. Anytime anyone posts anywhere, a new entry, a new list item is created in that microfeed list, specifically in the public folder. The public folder on that list contains all the data that is visible to any user or any service that wants to query it. If you came to our session on Tuesday, I talked a bit about privacy and security, and anything you post does not get trimmed. It is public to everyone. So by nature, when I posted to everyone the fact that we're going to present right now, it gets written as a root post within that public folder. So now that I've shown you, and the reason why this is important, why it's different than 2010, is that if you run out of space on your personal site and you uploaded a 7 gigabyte video of some fun night in Vegas, you won't be able to post on the feed in the morning. So when you're planning this and you're thinking about rolling it out to your users, just be aware that the data that you store, that they store on their personal sites, will impact their user experience with the social features. So that is one of the reasons why we opted for 7 gigabytes of storage by default on Office 365. And as Anoop mentioned, we encourage you guys to consider expanding the My Site storage on-prem as well. So I'm going to pass it off to Ben, who's going to continue the demo and explain a bit about viewing and consuming the newsfeed.
Thank you. So we saw Matt made his post. We know that social is sort of a two-way street. If he's just posting off and nobody's paying attention, there's not a whole lot of value to anybody. So I'm following Matt. I'm interested in the things that Matt says. So if I go to my newsfeed, I will see here there's a little indication that there's some new activity that is relevant to the things that I'm following. So I can click on that notification. I can read that this post that says that Matt just got his session approved and time to get started on his presentation. So this is great. Social, starting to make magic happen, starting to make connections between people, discover new information through the feed. So let's look for a second at what it actually took for me to view that post. So I'll say now that user profile service really is the glue of all of our social features, so it's pretty much going to be lit up by default on the rest of these slides. So through the user profile service, we need to get the set of the things that I'm following. So this is the following view. It's made up, like we've said before, of recent activities related to the documents, the sites, the people, and the hashtags that I'm following. So the first thing that we do when we land on this page is we need to get that set of things that I'm following. So as you can see here, we actually store that in two different places. In the profile database, we store the set of people that I'm following and the set of hashtags that I'm following. And in the personal site, we store the set of documents that I'm following and the set of sites that I'm following. So you may be asking, why do we store it in two places? And this was another design decision that we made and one of the trade-offs that we faced. If you use 2010, you probably know that your interests or the tags that you're interested in are in the profile DB, and the colleagues that you have are in the profile DB. So when we looked to figure out how to consolidate those into a single place, it really became a nightmare to try to figure out what the upgrade story would be. How do we migrate existing profile DB entries into the personal site, which, as Anoop discussed, we think is really the scalable solution for social data. So where we landed was, let's not attempt to do that. We'll go look at two different places to find the set of things that I'm following. And once we do that, we go to that centralized feed cache. And essentially, you can think of it as a pretty massive store of all of the activities that have been happening within my company. And then we essentially take the set of things that I'm following as a filter on that list, and out the other side comes the set of activities based on only the things that I'm following, as you see. So why does this matter? One of the key pieces here is that massive feed cache is an in-memory cache. So the amount of RAM that you have on the machine where that cache happens to live is really going to be the deciding factor for how many activities you show, how far back those recent activities will be. But let's say you have plenty of RAM. Let's say that you could store all the activities that you would ever need. There is still a 7-day TTL on those activities. So one thing to keep in mind is that if you want, for whatever reason, those activities not to be around for as long, or if you want them to be around for a little bit longer, you can go in and tweak that setting. So we're going to go back to the demo for a second and really see the social features start to come to life. So in this case, I see that Matt got his session approved. And I know I work with Matt. I feel like maybe we have some similar interests, some similar things to talk about at SharePoint conference. And I actually got approved just at the same time he did. And I tend to be very, very quick to act. So as soon as I got my approval letter, I created a site that we could use to start collaborating around this deck and around our preparation for the conference. So I can easily navigate to the sites I'm following. And I quickly want to just grab the URL of this site. So one click highlights it. I can copy it. I can go back to my newsfeed, click reply, and tell Matt I created, paste in the URL, change how we want it to show up. Created the site. We should talk. So now I know that Matt's going to get an email because it was a reply. And he's also going to see this in his feed if he views his feed later. So let's look a little bit at what it actually takes to reply to that post. So it's going to be somewhat similar to what we saw when Matt made his root post, but there's some subtlety that's worth digging into here. So like before, and like we've said, when somebody creates a new post, we want to write it to two places. We want it always to go to that feed cache, because that's where all the recent activity is going to go. So now if somebody's following me, in their newsfeed, they'll see that I replied to this conversation that Matt started. And the other place, because we always want anything that users create to be persisted, we're going to persist that post that I made. So here's where it gets a little bit interesting. Even though I was the one that made the post, we want to actually persist the post on Matt's personal site. So there are a couple of reasons that we decided to do this. First of all, one of the challenges that we faced in 2010 was that conversations were spread all over the place. So when we started thinking about where do we persist replies to conversations that are started somewhere, it just made the most sense for us to have that entire conversation live in one place. And the other thing that we decided on is that let's let Matt, who is the one that started that conversation, whose personal site that conversation lives on, be the one that really controls that conversation. So if he wants, he can go in and he can lock it so nobody can reply later. If it gets really out of hand, he can go in and he can delete it, and it'll, like I said before, it'll be deleted from everywhere that it lives. So one thing that may come to mind is, great, all of the great replying that I've been doing across SharePoint and across all of the people that I'm interested in are going to get stored on their sites. How are people going to land on my profile and know what I've been doing? So we absolutely wanted to solve for that. So we introduced this concept called the reference post. So essentially, we want one true copy of a post to be persisted only in one place. But there are certainly scenarios where we want to refer to that post from other places. So in this case, a reference post is sort of a stub post that gets written to my personal site. So people who land on my profile will see Ben was replying to all sorts of conversations. And from there, they can dig in and really figure out what I was saying and what those conversations were. So let's take a quick look at that so you can see Matt's smiling face. This is Matt's personal site. And like we saw before, we're going to use the microfeed list because that's where the activity-related posts get stored. We're going to go to the public folder because, again, this is a totally public, shared with everyone conversation. And we're going to write it, unlike a root post that Matt showed, it's going to be written as a reply post type to that SP list. So let's flip over, look at my site, and this is where we start to go down a slightly different path. We use that microfeed list again, and this time we go to the private folder. So we use the private folder to store data that's private or that we want to secure and basically not put out there for everybody and every service to see. One of the main reasons we did this is out of concern for search. So in this scenario, that stub post is kind of meaningless out of context. So we wanted to make sure that as search crawls my personal site, that it's not going to pick up this reference post that says Ben Wilde replied to a conversation that Matt Fezco started. Because if you see that in search results, that's not going to mean anything. So we put these reference posts into the private folder to keep them out of the scope of search. So you can see reference post lands right there. So why do we think that you guys may care about this? This is one that Matt hit on earlier, but it's particularly frustrating if you're actually the one that's replying and not creating the root post. So if Matt goes in and uploads his crazy wild Vegas video from last night and fills up his personal site after he makes that post, when I see that post and I try to reply and put in the link to the site, I'm going to get blocked from actually posting that because remember that post is stored on his site and limited by his quota. So it can certainly be a frustrating experience if you run out of space. And another thing to highlight is that you do get email, or your users will get an email as they start to approach their quota. So one thing that we think would be nice to keep in mind is to A, set that quota to be large, but B, make sure that your users are aware of these emails and maybe have some best practices or tips for what they can do once they do start to hit their quota. So far we saw an initial post, and I lost the presentation. We saw an initial post, and we saw that Matt and I are now starting to get on the same page about our presentation that we're giving today. So Matt's going to show what happens next.
Thanks, Ben. So any good social software wouldn't be complete without integrating with email. We recognize that everyone lives in email, and I can say that we live 50% in both places. We live in the feed, we also live in email, and I probably will respond to any post or mention within 3 seconds of someone sending me any kind of communication. Also, you can mention me on Twitter, so there. So I'm going to go into my email and show you guys what happens. So Ben just replied to that post, as you saw, and immediately I got the email right here. And one of the great things is that it's fully actionable. I can see the content just like I'm in the feed, and I would be able to click on the link or go and click the see full conversation to participate. So let me show you how that works. So when Ben sent that email, when Ben hit that reply post, the first thing that happens is that we query the personal site of the person where that post lives. So I was the original poster. The post lives on my personal site. We go to that, and we retrieve the list of subscribers for that thread. I'm the only person who posted. I'm the only subscriber. If there are more people who have posted, there are more subscribers. We return that list, and then we want to look up whether those people want to receive emails or not for all conversations, or for that one specifically. So we go to the profile DB, we look at that email notification setting. If you came to our session on Tuesday, we delve deeper into where that is, but it's in the newsfeed settings of Edit Profile, and users can uncheck and easily do that. And once we vet that list with the total number, we return that, use the mail server that's configured in Central Admin, and send all the reply emails right from there. We then go back to my personal site and update the list of subscribers with that person who just posted, if they hadn't been there already. So in this case, Ben replied. He's now in that list of subscribers. And if anyone else, so if Reagan comes and replies to that post, because she always answers every question I have, we will both get the answer in our email. So the reason why you may care is that we want to make sure that you do set up that email in advance. Otherwise, part of that integration, those features, aren't really valuable. And you can think about maybe changing the default email address, which is no-reply, and maybe make it something where your users are aware of who is this bot sending me these emails. So we talked about posting. We talked about a little about following people. We talked about email. And now let's get to the meat of what 2013 is all about, following content. So I'm in my email. I see this post. I see this site. Ben is really on top of his game. He is always 3 steps ahead of me, and he created this site so we can start collaborating. One thing I do love about this site is there's a great project plan at the top. Ben started some conversations in the site feed on the site, and he also added in some documents. So this one, breaking down the SharePoint 2013 news feed, that looks like something that we'll probably be presenting at some point. So I'm going to go ahead and follow this document. You'll notice in the top right corner, it gave me confirmation. I'm now following it. And 3 things now happen. When I follow that document, I can easily get back to it in the Docs I'm Following page. You can follow documents all across SharePoint, curated in one place to get back to everything. Personally, before this feature existed, I had so many bookmarks. OneNote had links to documents. My email had documents. When we finally released this feature, it really helped me figure out where all my specs were located. The second thing that happens is that anyone who is following me will see a now following post in the newsfeed, as long as they have access to the document. And the reason why this is great, and Ben and I talked about this before, but this serendipitous discovery of information, the fact that people can now see what I'm working on or what I care about, allows them to see that information as well. And it gets people on the same page, talking about the same information, and no one really misses out on what's happening in the business. The final thing that happens is that anytime anyone modifies that document, I will see that in my feed. I don't need to wait for an email. I don't need to have an IM conversation or open the document, or God forbid, go to the properties and see last modified by to see the last time or whenever someone modified that document. So I'm going to go ahead and also follow this site because I want to easily get back to this as well. And any conversations in that site will also show up in my feed. So let me show you guys that real quick. I'm going to jump back to my news feed, and right there at the top, you'll see that it now says I'm following that. So I'll wait for any pictures that happen. And I'm going to show you guys how that works. So when I follow this doc, when I follow the document in that site, the first thing we do is a privacy check. And I mentioned this before, but we want to make sure that users are fully aware of what they are posting and what activities they generate. So we allow users to control all those activities in Edit Profile. So the first thing that happens when I follow that document in site is it goes through the privacy check service, and it looks at the activities I want to share. Those activities are located in the profile DB, and specifically the now following or doc site setting. And as an admin, you can configure that whether it's turned on or off by default when people follow documents or sites. Once that is checked and once that goes through, we then write those posts to two places, as we've already mentioned a number of times. We write it to the feed cache. That's where that now following post lives. That's why when I clicked, it showed up so quickly. And we also do a few things to the personal site. So let me delve a bit deeper here so you can see what we do. So as always, the microfeed list, the newsfeed activities are located here. But when I follow that document and it creates that activity, we actually store that activity in the private folder. Ben mentioned this before, the private folder or anything public will get indexed by search. And we want to make sure that whenever anyone comes to search for any of these activities, that that gets security trimmed. Because they shouldn't see the fact that I followed the layoffs for 2013. That would be a serious violation. So we store that post specifically in the private folder as a trimmable post. And anytime anyone comes to search for it, we do run the search index, this security trimming, to make sure that they do have access and can see it. At the same time that I follow, we also add something to the social list. So we've been saying here, you follow a Docker site and you can see it later. Ben mentioned this in the beginning, when we query the feed cache to see what I should receive, we look to see the followed people and followed tags from profile DB, and follow docs and follow sites from the personal site. Those followed docs and followed sites are stored in the social list. And the social list is all social storage not related to anything with the newsfeed activity. So in the social list, we have this followed content folder. And in that followed content folder, we store those followed docs and sites. And when I followed breaking down the SharePoint 2013 newsfeed, it added that to the list. And when I followed the site, it added that as well. And the reason why you may care, and Anoop touched on this heavily, is that if you don't have social capabilities and you don't have a My site, you will not be able to follow content. And I know this is different than 2010. It was more optional to set that up. But we really want to reiterate how important this is, that if you don't, if the personal site isn't instantiated, people can't follow documents or sites, which we really think is a huge value add in SharePoint 2013. So I'm going to pass it off to Ben, who's going to explain a bit more how that security trimming, those trimmable posts, actually work.
Thank you, Matt. So like Matt said, the serendipitous discovery of new content is one of the things we've been touting at the SharePoint Social sessions, at the Yammer sessions. We think it's really a key scenario for social, one of the great business values that come out of deploying social. But we're also super, super, super cautious to not let somebody serendipitously discover something that they don't have access to. So we wanted to delve into what security trimming means and how it really works this release. So make sure that you guys are comfortable with what we're doing and understand fully that how important it really is to us and how much it factored into the design decisions that we made. So if I go back to my feed, I'll see once again there's some new notifications here. You may guess what they are, because I'm following Matt. I'm going to see the document, and I'm going to see the site that Matt just followed. So in this case, it's the planning site that I set up, which is great for me. I love to see that we're going to start collaborating on this. Matt's interested in it. The other thing I see is that he started following this document. So I'm just going to take a slight diversion here, open up the document. And it's over here. So what I can do now is I'm going to say, you know what, I think we're on a path to presenting together. I'm confident enough to say, and Matt Fezco, and I'm going to save this document back up to SharePoint. So that was a slight tangent. Let me get back to security trimming, though, and what it took for this to show up in the first place. So one of the things that I mentioned at the very beginning when I viewed the most basic post that Matt created was that when I go to my following view, we want to get the set of things I'm following, and we want to go to that feed cache to get the recent activities based on those followed items. One thing we sort of glossed over before, didn't really talk about, is the fact that before we show any single one of those recent posts, we want to make sure that I do have access to it. So we go through the security trimming process. Essentially, we understand that there are going to be some posts in the feed that have URLs, like the one that we see here, and we want to make sure that I have access to that resource, to that document, to that site, before we even show this in my feed. So if I don't have access to breaking down the news feed, it'll be as if that post doesn't exist, even if I'm following Matt like I am. So we want to dig a little bit deeper into security trimming. And I don't know who's familiar with how it worked in 2010, but essentially the model back then was pretty simple. When you load your feed, there are a set of posts that have URLs that we want to make sure that we trim before you see them. And what we use to do that is search. And search has a security trimming service. And essentially what we do is we say, hey, search, here's this list of 8 URLs that Ben wants to view in his feed. Does he have access to these URLs or not? So search will come back and say, Ben has access to these 6 URLs. And what we do at the end is we'll render the feed and we'll show those 6 posts and we'll hide the 2 that I don't have access to. So pretty simple model. One of the things that we found in practice, though, is that as more and more people started using social features, as more and more people started generating posts that needed to be trimmed, and as more and more people were loading their news feed, we started to really put a lot of tax on the search service. So this again speaks back to the scale issue that we have seen before. So when we started thinking about what to do in 2013, we wanted to figure out how to protect that search service a little bit. So we introduced this idea called the access cache. And essentially, you can think of it as a layer between the news feed itself and the search service. So what we do in the access cache is we store, whenever a user goes to their news feed, what search told us about the set of URLs that we just asked search about. So we'll walk through the same scenario. And I will say, out of box, it defaults to storing that information for 24 hours. So same thing, I go to my following view. There are a set of those 8 URLs that are related to the things that I'm following. The first stop that we make now is at that access cache. And we ask the cache, does Ben have access to these URLs? In this case, maybe it's a Monday morning, maybe that 24 hours has expired. Search says, I don't, or the access cache says, I don't know. So we still go to search. So the key thing to keep in mind is search is still the oracle of whether or not you have access to a piece of content or not. And we use the information that we get back from search to render the feed, just like we did before. But now the key piece is that once we get that information back from search, we go back to that access cache and write whether or not I have access to each of those URLs that we just asked search about. So the benefit here is, as you can probably imagine, if I hit F5 on my news feed or I see a little number show up by the following count and I click on that to refresh the feed, and I know I personally am pretty much F5ing all day long to really stay on top of what's going on, we'll go to that access cache again. We'll ask it the same question. And in this case, we just asked search about those 8 URLs. The access cache knows whether or not I have access to them. So we're going to skip the search service entirely, let search keep focusing on producing all of the great search results that we've seen this week. And we're just going to render the feed and show or hide those posts based on whether the access cache says I have access to them or not. So why do you guys care? Like I said before, security trimming really does still rely on search. As happened in 2010, the faster search, the more search crawls, the more up-to-date the search index is, the more accurate the results are that we're going to get back from search as to whether or not you have access to a piece of content. The other thing is that we ship out of box with a 24-hour TTL in that access cache. But that's something that you can configure. If you want to optimize for shorter TTLs, for more precise accuracy, or if you want to go for longer TTLs, if you don't think access to documents is going to change that often, which is what, frankly, we've seen a lot of data that indicates that's the case, you can stretch that out and have the access cache hold those valid posts for longer. The other thing that we really want to underscore, though, is let's say there's a scenario where I followed a document, or I see that Matt followed a document, and then I lose access to that document. But the access cache still thinks that I have access to it for that short period of time until that entry expires. One of the key things is that, yes, I'll still see that post in my feed, because when we go to the access cache, it still thinks I have access. But the key thing to underline here is that we still respect SharePoint security when trying to open that piece of content itself. So if it's a site or if it's a document, and I see that Matt is now following secret document that Ben no longer has access to, when I click on that, I'm going to get a SharePoint error access denied message. So we really do still preserve the security of the data itself if I don't have access to it. So in that little tangent that I took, as soon as I serendipitously discovered that Matt just followed that document, you saw that I went in and edited that deck. I added Matt as a co-presenter. He's going to show what happens when I did that.
Great. Thanks, Ben. So I'm going to jump back to my news feed right here. And I see that there's a new ticker on following. I'm also an active F5er. I think that's going to be my new favorite phrase from now on. And I see that Ben modified that deck. So really, I know this is a little canned scenario right here, but it's actually working, which is really great. But I'm in our real lives and when we work, this has been really, really helpful to see who is working on the stuff that I care about. So let me show you how the doc edit posts work. So when Ben went in and modified that document, there's something that's a little bit different here. So all new sites and all existing sites that you guys have will automatically get upgraded when you upgrade to 2013 with a new feature called followed content. Followed content means that any document that lives on any site, you'll be able to follow it, any document or PowerPoint or whatnot. In addition to following content, we also added this doc mod listener, which is an event receiver that detects edits. So any document that's on any library that has content following has an event receiver. So Ben modified that document, and the event receiver picked up that modification and immediately went to the profile service and said, hey, write a post about this. Someone just modified the doc. So what happens here is a little bit different than what we've talked about previously with writing posts. We only write to one place. The reason why we only write to the feed cache, and then what we do there, really, is that we create this doc mod post. And the reason why we do this is because we didn't want to persist this in the personal site. We didn't want to create multiple posts. I'm sure many of you are working on something very time-critical sensitive and hit Control-S just like you hit F5 all the time. And if we were to create a feature that every time you saved, it would create a new post, it would clog up the feed, and there'd be no use to any of our social features. So thinking about that logic and how people actually use and manage documents, we opted for a single post representing modifications for each document that lives across SharePoint. And the interesting thing that happens, Reagan comes in and modifies the document because, again, she just is on top of everything. She updates it. I see in my feed, Reagan and Ben modified breaking down the SharePoint 2013 news feed. That post gets updated, and I mentioned that there, rather than created as a new one to notify me that two people have modified it. So this is very different than what we have in the past, and this is very different than the way that our regular microblogging and posting UI actually works. And the reason why you may care is because if the cache goes down, and the cache needs to be restarted, and it gets repopped with all the posts except docmod posts, because they only live in the feed cache and not persisted anywhere, they're gone forever. So we thought about this. It was an active trade-off. We thought, what makes more sense, having 1,000 docmod posts that would get repopped at the just-in-case percentage that the cache goes down, or create the better user experience that people who are following that document will see when it's updated once at the top of their feed? So now I'm going to pass it off to Ben, who's going to go over a bit further into detail on creating richer posts and some of the cool features that we've enabled this release.
Thanks, Matt. So at this point in our little scenario that we're playing out, Matt and I have been editing our PowerPoint deck. We think that we're about at a point where we want some additional eyeballs on it. We want to share it with some additional folks, get some additional review, get some feedback, get some comments. We got a lot of comments on it leading up to this point. So one of the things I want to do is I'm going to go to this site that we set up. and I can use the news feed on this site. And the reason I do this is because the site feed here is scoped to only people that have access to the site. So in this scenario, there are a handful of folks from our team who are presenting at this conference. We want to make sure that they're all actively involved in this site. And only the people who have access to the site are going to be able to see the discussions that we have here. So I want to start with a small audience, with a small group of people to get their very important feedback. So I can go over to the site feed, and the first thing I want to do is do an at mention. So I can type the at sign and start typing Matt's name. So I'm going to use an at mention to make sure that Matt sees this post. Even though everybody that has access to the site will be able to read it, I want to make sure that Matt gets some extra visibility into what I'm saying here, because we're partnering together and really delivering this great deck. So I can say Matt Fezco, and you'll notice that there's two lists here. There's the set of people that I'm following, and there's the set of everyone at my company. So I can pick, because I happen to be following Matt, I can pick them from there. And I'm going to say, and I have our, and I'm going to quickly grab the URL to this presentation. I'm going to paste that right into the newsfeed. And I'm going to change the way that we refer to it. Tech. Ready for, and then the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to add a hashtag. So in this case, I want to make it clear to anybody who sees this post what the topic of that post is, what the theme of what I'm writing about is. And I also want to make sure that anybody who searches for that hashtag subsequently, as long as they have access to the site, will see this discussion that we're having about the SharePoint conference. And then I can just say feedback, please. So I'm going to stop before I actually post this, because there was a fair amount that went into actually generating this post. So we're going to flip over and take a look at that. So in this case, when I type that at sign, and we're going to look at the at mention first, when I type that at sign, we go to the profile database, and we get two sets of information. We get the set of people that I'm following, and we also get everybody in the company. So this was actually a design decision that we made. We wanted to optimize both for user experience here and for performance. So we think that more often than not, and we've certainly found this internally, you're going to want to at mention somebody that you're already interested in, that you're already following. So we wanted to present that information in a really easy to access and easy to click way. But we also acknowledge that maybe you're going to want to mention somebody that you're not following yet. So we definitely wanted to include the everyone information. But from the performance perspective, it's a lot more expensive to pull the list of everybody in the company. And if there were more people in the demo, you would have seen, as I kept typing, that list would have kept word wheeling and showing the people that matched the string I'd typed in. So our goal here is to really expose the thing that we want you to click on most, so you'll click on that, and we'll be able to stop hammering the profile DB, asking continually for everybody at the company. So the next thing we do, and when I added that the link to the deck, we do all of that in JavaScript, and we render that nice little snippet in JavaScript. There are no services involved in doing that. So the next thing I added was that hashtag. So we use the managed metadata service, which is, again, the service that is responsible for managing all of the hashtags. And we look into the term store. And as you saw, there was that the suggested list, like with people, as I type, we refine that list to be accurate based on what I'm adding. And as we saw in the demo, I just picked one out of that list, and it added that hashtag to the post. If I wasn't happy and there wasn't a hashtag in there that I wanted to add, when I type space or punctuation after that tag and hit post, we actually create a new hashtag in that term set. So why is this important? And this is the first mention of hashtags, and it's definitely an interesting topic. There is a new term set this release that does store all of those hashtags. So if you have tags that you want your customers to use, or if you have existing social tags that you think you want to show up in that pre-populated hashtag suggestion list, you can go in and pre-add that set of tags to the term set. So your users they'll have a head start, and they'll be able to use the tags that you think they're going to be most interested in. The other thing is that for that everyone view, if I want to at mention somebody from there, that pulls, like we said, from the profile database. If somebody doesn't happen to live in the profile database, I won't be able to send them an at mention. So I'm going to flip over for probably the shortest demo at SharePoint Conference. I'm going to go back to the site feed, and I'm going to click post. Thank you. So let's talk about what happened there. So one click, unfortunately is going to lead to a couple minutes of discussion. So here's something that's a little bit different from what we've seen before. As soon as I clicked post, we have a similar concept. We want to write that post to that feed cache, so anybody who's following this site will see this conversation in their following view. And we want to also persist that post somewhere. In this case, though, because it's not shared with everyone, it's not something that I posted from my personal news feed, we actually persist this to the site feed. The other piece that gets a little bit tricky here is because I at-mentioned Matt, we want to do a little bit of extra magic to make sure that everything goes through and he does get full awareness that I called his attention to a post. So we'll use the user profile service and talk to the mail server and spin up an email. We're also going to go to Matt's personal site because we really want to make sure that when he lands on that following view or on his newsfeed page, he gets some in SharePoint UI that indicates that something important is happening for him as well. So we do two things there. We write a reference post that he was mentioned because, again, recalling the post actually lives on the site feed, but we want to reference that post from Matt's personal site. And the other thing we do is we bump up the number of unread mentions that he has in the UI of his site. So let's take a quick look at both of those two places that we persist some information. The site feed should look very, very familiar. We actually use the same schema as we use for your personal feed. So when I create that site, it goes to the public folder. And here, public is a little bit of a misnomer. It's really public only to people who have access to that site. And it gets written as a root post. So nothing super surprising there. You will note that there is the private folder still in the list schema, but we don't use it for anything. And then we do some work on Matt's personal site. So like we said, we wanted to write that reference post. So when Matt goes to his feed, he'll be able to just really easily see that I'd mentioned him and see what I said. And we write that to the private folder for the same reason that we just discussed before. We don't want reference posts to start showing up in search and being out of context. But we also go to his social list. So this is where there's another, in addition to followed content, on your social list, we keep track of the number of unread mentions that you have. And we'll see what that looks like in a second. But when I mention Matt, we'll bump up his unread mention count by one. So why is this important? Again, going back to the capabilities, this is actually an area where we think that collaboration on a team site and having open discussions with everybody who has access to that site is a really critical scenario for everybody. So we spent some extra engineering time and did some extra work to make sure that everybody who has access to that site will be able to participate in the discussions there and ask questions and answer questions and share information and paste links. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't have social capabilities and you can't follow content or you can't post to everyone, you still can participate in these great discussions that are happening on sites. So Matt's now going to talk about what happened on the flip side after I did that magical post-click demo.
Thanks, Ben. I like your magical post-click demos a lot.
Thank you.
So I'm on my feed. This is where, as I mentioned, spent a lot of my time. And Ben just talked about that mentions count. So as you can see here, the mentions count. And if you weren't at our previous talk, we talked about following and everyone. But the mentions is essentially the notification center for your SharePoint Social, your news feed. It's where everything, where everyone mentions you, lives, and it's the place that you, and as an end user, can go back and take a look at all the more important things that people have said, hey, can you review this, or hey, here's a picture of my cat, or you know, all that important work. So I'm going to go to my mentions view and see what's up, and I see that Ben has already posted this deck that he's going to share with other people asking for feedback, and what's really great about this and about some of our features is right in line, I can click the preview button without having to leave this context and see the feed and see that document right here. And I can go through and take a look at this deck. I really hope we do a bit better because this is a little sparse. Oh, okay, great. So let me show you how that worked. So the user profile service, as always we mentioned, is utilized here. And when I'm on my feed, the first thing that happens when I go to click that mentions view is it retrieves the ref mentions stored on my personal site. Ben mentioned before their ref mention, the ref post is added to my personal site so that when I click that view, I can get all those posts quickly. It didn't make sense to store those on whoever mentioned, and it also didn't make sense to store those anywhere else besides my own personal site in a secure private place that doesn't get indexed by search. And anytime you come back to mentions, all that stuff will be there. So I go to my mentions view, and I'm able to see that post. And when I click the preview button, we utilize the web apps service. And if you're familiar with Word, Excel, PowerPoint, the web apps that are available in the browser, we use that same service to create this rich preview right in line. So you can take a look at the document, verify it, or open it up for further curation. The reason why you may care here, as you would expect, is that in order for those rich previews to work, you need to have web apps configured. So we want to show almost our last demo here, some of the cool stuff we did with tagging. So I'm going to go back to my feed, and I see that Ben added this SharePoint conference tag. The reason why tagging is interesting in this release and different before, and the way we incorporated it with the news feed, is that tagging represents the conversations that are happening across the company. So Ben and I work in Cambridge in Boston in a smaller Microsoft office. There's like 500 or 1,000 in the area, and there's 40,000 people who work for Microsoft in Redmond, and 95,000 who work worldwide. And really, before this feed, before we had these features that we're showing you now, there was no way to see what people were talking about across the company. Yes, there are those emails that get sent out. I think they're called distribution lists. I think people still use those. But there was no good way to just get a general sense about what people are talking about or be able to reply. And even further, it's a little awkward sometimes when a senior person writes something, you're not going to hit the reply button and send them an email. But if they post in the feed, all social barriers are down and anyone can reply. And one of the cool things about tagging, and what I sort of went on a tangent there, is tagging is that categorization. It's what are you talking about? And whenever a tag is used in the feed, anytime you click, just like with Twitter, you're able to go and get this search results page for this tag. And any of the conversations that are tagged with this tag will appear here. And actually, as you can see, it looks like search indexed that right here.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's pretty. Okay. So one of the things before we get there, I want to show you at the top, you can easily click follow this tag. We use the same UI paradigms for following people and tags so that it's very similar and consistent for users. And if I'm following that, I'll see all the conversations in my feed, and that follow will get added to the profile DB. The other thing that happens is that not just these relevant conversations, not just what the SharePoint conference tag appears here, but one of the awesome features that we created this release is the ability to relate tags to each other. And you can see in the top right corner, SBC 2012. Any end user or admin can go and relate tags to each other so that when you go and search for any of those tags, all of the conversations on a given topic show up in this view. I can tell you how many times on Twitter people spell the wrong tag, and there are 300 tags for one topic. And there's no feature that actually unifies them together in a smart way that makes sense. So in this user interface, you're able to go in anyone, go in, relate the tags, and anytime you search, you'll see all of these tags right here. You can hover, and I'll show you this one specifically. This one, if you notice, it shows the feed post and the original post. That's the reply post. The hashtag that's used that shows up in the search result is that related tag, SPC 2012. And this really is a great way to see all the conversations happening. And at the same time, if you tag content with any of these hashtags, you're able to see the tagged items here as well. We don't have any, but you would be able to.
And in fact, you can use any enterprise keyword. If you tag content with that keyword, it'll show up in the tagged items section.
Yep. So let me show you how that whole tag scenario works. So when we go and search for the tag, the SharePoint conference tag, the first thing that happens is we look at the profile DB to see whether I'm following that tag or not. Because at the top, the first thing that loads is to determine whether it should say follow this tag or stop following this tag. And it's an easy way to get back there. The next thing that happens, and really the crux of the tagging scenario, is we utilize the Manage Metadata service, which, as Ben mentioned before, manages all tag data. And we go to the term store. From the term store, which is where the keyword, where that term set is located, we retrieve all of the related tags info. So if there are 10 tags, whatever it is, we get all those tags. We go over to search. We take that information and say, give me all posts with this tag or any of the related tags. And search goes right into the search index that's already been crawled. And it retrieves not just what we post on the everyone feed or the everyone view, but also the site feed posts, as long as I have access to them. So Ben, before, used the tag in that site feed, and he added it there. I had access to that site, and so I saw that in the search results. If any of you come and search for it, you won't see it because I didn't share that site with you. So this is a great way to bring conversations around a given topic all over the company, across all sites, right to your desktop computer or laptop. So the reason why this is interesting is that search does need to be configured. But even if it is, the conversations that haven't yet been crawled or indexed will not appear here. So I was actually surprised to see our post show up. I guess the crawling was faster than we assumed.
We lucked out a little bit.
We did this. The demo gods are really good on Thursdays. And we're able to see all those posts right there. So I'm going to pass it back off to Ben, who's going to wrap up our presentation.
So throughout this discussion today, but probably even more in previous discussions, you've seen these three pillars of social and why social is great and why social makes employees' lives easier and why it makes your business more agile. The thing that we hope that you took away from today is that we built all of these great features in SharePoint. We really do have 100% belief in the great scenarios that we enable, and you saw us today walk through some of those scenarios as we actually used them. But the thing that we wanted to underscore today is that we built them this release, and we really focused on building them on a resilient platform. So we talked today about some of the trade-offs that we made around performance, around scalability, and we wanted to make sure that we still respect privacy and make sure that security is still a top-notch concern across all of the social features. So hopefully today you really took away the how, the what, the why, I don't know if we had a what, the where, but really got an understanding of how all everything ticks, but also that it was built in a reliable way. So we want to thank you from the bottoms of our hearts and on behalf of everybody else from the team who's not here. Some other sessions, which you've almost certainly missed, the videos are popping up very quickly online. So these are some related ones that you can certainly check out. And then the last thing is a shout out to our documentation folks in the front row. If you want to go even deeper than what we talked about today, there's some great, great reference documents here that you should absolutely go check out and really, really dig in. So with that, we'd love to open it up for questions.
Oh, if you guys want to use the mic so the questions can get recorded, that would be awesome. And if not, I'll repeat them.
Good morning. Is it possible to force people to follow tags?
To force people to follow tags? No, unfortunately.
Not out of box, at least.
Jeremy is our tag guru, so we have designated people with all the knowledge here.
Hello. How is it with company feeds? They also aggregate all news feeds, and we get a company feed, or how to implement this?
Could you repeat the
question? Can you repeat the question?
So if I want to build a company-wide feed,
yes.
I use all this, what we heard, and aggregate it in one company feed.
So I can quickly actually show you that. Okay. So we didn't actually touch on it in this example, but the everyone view right here is the company feed that everyone across the company participates in.
Okay, and I can take this and place it on a landing page so that everyone can see it.
Unfortunately, in this release, you can't make it the default landing page. The default is the following view.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You talk about using index to crawl frequently to review all this information. What does that do in terms of scalability? I mean, in 2010, we didn't really ever configure index to crawl like every 2 minutes.
So that's a great question for the search team. Again, it's a trade-off. One thing that we kept coming across as we were designing these features was that, you know, you can maximize for totally up-to-date current results, but it does come at a cost of scale. Or you could go the other way and protect search even more, but maybe you're not going to see all of the latest conversations or security trimming data won't be totally accurate.
Just out of curiosity, are you running off a VM?
No, Office 365.
This is Office 365.
We have demo tenants. And the ones we showed Tuesday were all the same. And I can tell you from my own personal experience, I don't feel like I've searched things that someone posted in 24 hours. I would have known where those were already, and I would go there directly.
So on all 365, we're seeing crawling happening how frequently? It looks like every couple minutes?
5 minutes. 5 minutes. 5 minutes. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
You mentioned about the feed cache being available only for the last 7 days. So what's the configurable option? You know, is it from the UI or PowerShell? How can you configure it?
It's a maximum of 30 days, and it's configurable via PowerShell.
Okay. And just one more question on the edit piece. So you mentioned there's only one feed that shows up on the edit. So does it also show the last modified date and time along with that?
Like no. Unfortunately, this release, we wanted to the doc modified, does it have a timestamp?
No,
it does not have a timestamp. Okay, so
but it will be sorted. It will be chronologically located within the feed based on when it was.
But you mentioned that in the edit, there'll only be one comment that will be made, right? So if I am the one editing that, and let's say I take like 2 hours, you know, first feed was edited 2 hours before, and then after that I edited 2 hours, there'll only be one reply?
It will. So the way that we do it is, as long as that previous one hasn't expired, as long as it's still in that feed cache, we'll update that post and tack on the new person's name.
I mean, I was thinking from more of a review scenario, you know, basically that I started something and somebody else reviewed it, and then I made some more changes. So will that still be like one conversation?
Yep. It'll be one single post that has everybody's name that modified it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi. Could you talk a bit about best practices in weaning people off the email hamster wheel and moving towards new ways of social working?
So I think one of the key things that I've heard, and I've heard from customers, that this is one of the key things that they do, is you got to get people using the feed. And one of the key ways to do that that we've found is start at the top, get some executive support, get some executive sponsorship, have people, you know, you need to motivate people to actually come there, and the best motivation is to see posts that people care about. So we've found that, you know, Getting people started for the first time, getting them to even click on that newsfeed link and go to this feed, we think the UI is gorgeous and compelling in itself. But as long as there's some content there that's going to be interesting.
Yep. And the other thing I would add, and this is I personally do this, when I'm about to send a document to someone for a review, I say, do I want to email or do I want to put it in the feed? Is my goal for just review for this person, or would it be awesome if someone who I don't know, who happens to be a knowledge expert in that area, reviews it as well? And I can tell you, I mean, that behavior, I mean, it's included, you know, when I go and find some interesting tech article or a video of Steve Ballmer running around crazy, I'll post that to the feed to share that with people rather than my team email. And it really is just a great way to get people using the features. You're welcome.
Hello. You mentioned that hashtags are saved in a term set?
Yes.
Are they limited to the 30,000? Is that limitation a hard limitation? Can they scale to millions?
Jeremy.
Term set is how big can the term set, the hashtag term set get?
Is it limited? Because the term set's limited to 30,000 items, right? So it's most likely that you're limited to 30,000 per one term set, right? It doesn't scale.
Do you?
Okay.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Do you think that you'd hit that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. So we work for a pharmaceutical company. And we have millions of compounds, which there will be possibly.
I think actually that's not. I think it's bigger because I remember having conversations with MSIT that there were over 500,000 tags that they wanted to migrate. So.
Well, you must have that at Microsoft, right?
Yeah.
Will do. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a million tags. Yeah, but we'll check.
1 million tags.
One of the frustrations with 2010 has been the inability to maybe sort of interrogate that data easily that was in the social engine. I think you mentioned it's in lists and libraries now. So is that data now a lot easier to get to?
To get to
the
figures and so numbers of.
So the analytics side of things?
Exactly, yeah.
I don't believe that we made a lot of investment in that space. The good news is we store it in standard SP lists, so if you want to dig into it on your own, you can, or the profile database. But good question. It's definitely a scenario that we would look to light up in the future.
Mm-hmm. A couple questions about the security trimming process. So if the document hasn't been crawled yet, what happens in that scenario?
No, it doesn't show up for anybody.
Nobody else would see that.
Correct.
Okay.
Secure, yeah, definitely secure by default.
All right. And then does the security trimming process apply to links to documents? Just the following scenario?
It's just that, so essentially the goal, and that's a great question. We wondered whether that would come up. One of the things that we considered when we started building this feed was, should we try to trim every single link that anybody even posts in there? And we had many discussions with our legal department and essentially landed on the fact that you can do that exact same thing in email. So let's, you know, you can take an email, you can send a document to somebody, you can send a link to a document to somebody. Let's not try to over-engineer something that's going to really cut down on social and on discovery just because some person may be a bonehead is the polite internal
word. Bonehead rule. If you click on it, you can't get to the doc.
Okay. And one more question. Can the everyone feed, can that be placed on other pages? Or is it just
It's not something that we support out of box, but...
But if you go and you look at, I believe, SPC227 was extending the social API, you can use the API to just get to get that and then create a web part yourself.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Using C#.
Hi.
Hi.
So are there any moderation capabilities in the system? Like, for example, if I'm an admin and I just want to control what feed should be shown on a particular user's or, you know, the whole company-wise feeds, like certain policies that I want to enforce on top of what can be shown?
So go ahead.
So you the admin can delete any post that does appear. We've seen in some practices, there's no built-in tools that we've created. I think some people can, they've been using tags if they feel something was inappropriate, and IT people have followed up with those tags, and they see those alerts, or they get emails about them. But unfortunately, there's no other management from that perspective.
Any last takers? Oh. So we have potential confirmation of hashtag term set limit at 30,000. A million total term store. I see. So, thank you.
All right, thank you.
So we're gonna actually. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You guys mentioned a lot of this is posted to the personal site. Is there anything you can set up on the back end that says, you know, after 30 or 45 days? It will get removed, so people don't have to go in there and manage their personal site that way.
So all of the persisted places that we store these data are SP lists. So any list moderation that you can use or any restrictions that you put on a list apply to the backend data here as well. So we're going to be at the booth, the social booth, for a little while after this. So if you have any questions, certainly come up here or meet us down there. And thanks again.